Earth is a second chance planet. In other words, we've all failed to graduate from other third density experiences.
So Earth is like you're getting your GED.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, it's a good analogy. When we have this awakening, and it can happen at any age, it is a starting point. It's not by any means a finishing point. But we are going to begin to have a physical visitation from multiple extraterrestrial sources, so that it will no longer be deniable. The government can say, oh no, it's swamp gas. Every universe is designed with a mixing and matching of archetypes of the Creator.
Buckle your seatbelts, everybody, and I'll tell you why right now. Today we're talking with Dean Graves. He provides information and instructs acolytes on self-healing and self-awareness. He has two podcasts, Chatting with Octurians, and the other is Simple Enlightenment. And his only guests are not incarnate. So buckle up again. It's going to be a ride. We're going to talk about consciousness. Are we alone in the universe? What happens when we die, even if we have time to get there? So, I mean, Dean, welcome to the show. I'm happy to have you on.
Thank you, John. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm like, where do we start? I mean, you're all for like the new age and helping with bringing in the enlightenment, which I love. And I know that a lot of what you're doing is working with meditation. And I think that's where everything started for you, right? And it was more recent, like when you were 50. Let's start with like where it all began, because that's interesting.
Okay. Well, most of my life was... I guess you could say a conventional life, family, work, career, ambitions, and reasonably successful at that. Around my 50th year, I had an awakening, and awakening is an often misunderstood experience. Very simply, what an awakening is an awareness that all this stuff that we do is not fulfilling. It's not bringing me greater happiness in spite of ambition, successes, and so forth. And when we have this awakening, and it can happen at any age, it can happen at 20, it can happen at 30, 40, 50, whatever, we begin to look around to see what alternatives are there to what we've been doing. And it is a starting point. It's not by any means a finishing point. And so we begin to question what we've been doing and to seek alternatives. In my experience, I was introduced to meditation and began meditation practice, diligent and earnest meditation practice. And what becomes apparent is when we reach this point, we often begin, and all of my students, without exception, we begin this process of meditation running away from the stick. In other words, what we've been doing hurts, doesn't feel good, and so we're looking for meditation to be a cure-all to the stick. And then one day, and this will happen depending on how earnest you are, but it is an immutable experience to everyone that participates in meditation, is you get a bite of the apple. And the apple tastes really good. And so we transform our motivation from running away from the stick to chasing the apple. And the apple becomes our guide as to what we do with our meditation, how we progress, and we will vary back and forth, and we'll try all the different flavors of apples and so forth. But as our motivation accelerates along this path of self-exploration, then we find greater success. And all of these experiences, which are incremental along the way, are immutable. They will be the same feeling for everyone. Not the same experience, but the same feeling. And so consequently, we progress along the enlightenment path. And enlightenment also is an often misunderstood concept. We perceive, because of the successes that the Buddha had, that enlightenment is a destination. It's not a destination, it's the process itself. And so everyone, even those that still remain in that chaotic state of being, are on the enlightenment path. They're just unaware of that. And so, that is our mission in life. That is our purpose in life, is to explore the self. And we all share that same. That is our purpose in life. Our mission in life will vary from individual to individual. If you decide that you're going to be a physician or a lawyer or a factory worker, whatever the occupation and the activities that we choose in our life simply are there to provide us with the opportunity to become more self-aware. They provide mm-hmm. us with the nature of our experiences, but the purpose of life is exactly the same for everyone.
It's interesting how it doesn't matter what you do, you get a chance, whatever you decide to do, as long as you're moving, you're going to get hit with self-reflection, whether you fall and have to get up or you find a success. So that rings true for me as well. But you said something about biting the apple, and I can only imagine anybody in the audience thinking, is he talking about the forbidden fruit? That's the first thing that popped in my head.
No, we're talking about a fruit that tastes really good, and most people like apples. But no, there's nothing, absolutely nothing. Let me qualify that. It is forbidden by those that wish to keep us from having a bite of the apple. In other words, we exist within a range of consciousness, and there is a curriculum that we are to learn in this range of consciousness. And through our experiences, we learn the lessons of the curriculum to move forward. And we have a choice, and one of the strategic choices that we have to make, and we can talk about the imminence of that, which is another significant factor of our New Age experience. We have to choose whether we are going to polarize service to self or service to others. And that is a strategic decision, because it is our design in this range of consciousness that we will create, beginning with the first thought that we have as an infant, we will create a hierophant or an identity or an ego. It's all the same thing, just different words for the exact same condition. This hierophant is who we think we are, and it creates an ego mind. So because it's who we think we are, we create this to fulfill our motivation in life. Our motivation in life is to get more of what we like. What we like will vary from person to person, depending where we are on this enlightenment scale, and it literally is a scale. And we create this hierophant in order to trick the world into giving us more of what we like. So as we get older, we say, I'm going to be a physician, and I'm going to be really important, okay? That is a belief that we incorporate in our identity. We do that for the sole purpose of tricking the world to giving us more of what we like. We may initially perceive that what we like to be money. We may evolve to realize that what we really and truly like is love. But the problem is we don't know what love is, because we begin without any information or any knowledge. And so that point of awakening is that point of awakening that we realize that the hierophant, our perception of self, our autonomous perception of self, isn't working. And so while we are in the chaotic stage up to that point of awakening, we have awareness, but that awareness is pointed outside of us in order to try to measure how effective our hierophant is being in giving us more of what we like. and we try to trick the world by modifying our hierophant, how I dress, how I think, what clubs I belong to, what churches, people we associate. All of that stuff is a result of our hierophant and how we perceive ourselves and what we believe will bring us greater happiness. But it is also our source of stress and suffering.
Yeah.
And so we get to this point of awakening, and one of the essential points that we find when we reach this point of awakening is the necessity of turning that awareness around. So instead of that awareness being pointed outside of us to measure how our hierophant is doing, we begin to turn that awareness inside and begin to look inside and investigate what I have incorporated into this false identity, into this hierophant, that needs to be amended. Because we're the only thing that we can change. We can change ourselves, and that's it.
I want to interject real quick. You're dropping some gold nuggets right now. A lot of important self-awareness steps of going from, right, sourcing from outside of you to sourcing from within. Did that awareness happen when you started to meditate? And I'm just curious, where did that awareness come to be? How did you come to embody that?
Well, that's what meditation does. When I explained particularly my new students, but it's something that you have to reiterate because it's an ongoing process. We exist both in the metaphysical world and the physical world simultaneously. You and I talking right now are an analog projection of our metaphysical self. And if you think of our experience in the physical world, is we're on a sports team. And almost every sports team is the same. You practice all week. You look at game films. You study plays, yada, 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 all those things that a sport team does. And then you have a game on Friday night. We're in the game. This is the game that we're in right now. We're incarnate. When we are not incarnate, we're back in the locker room studying game films. We review, well, you know, I was going to do this in the last game and I didn't do it, and so on and so forth. You know, all of those coach-directed things. And we resolve we're going to do better at this next incarnation as far as learning the curriculum of this range of consciousness. And then we go into the game again. And we play another game. The difficulty with the game is we are required to forget everything that we knew while we were in the locker room when we were practicing on the practice field, and we try again. And so the metaphysical self is who we visit when we are in meditation. When we get that bite of the apple, what we're really doing is feeling our authentic self, which is underneath. For everybody, it's underneath this hierophant that we create while we are incarnate. And so the meditation allows us to have a reprieve from the village. When we are in the game, we're in the village.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When we are in meditation, we are with and or are our metaphysical self.
So when you meditate and you began meditating, Are you telling me that a lot of what you've learned and what you're sharing with people came as a download, or is it mostly from those conversations with maybe, I'm guessing, Arcturians? Because I'm like, I want to know, where did you get this information from? Because when you meditate, yes, you go deep and you disconnect from the body. Depending on the different levels, right? And you're off the playing field. I want to know, who are you talking to in the locker room when you leave? And how is it that what makes you special that you remember when you come back into the field? Because it sounds like you're remembering when most people don't. What's going on there?
Okay. Well, your metaphysical, the universe is a very busy place. We perceive that we are possibly alone in the universe. We're not. We are part of a vast system, more vast than we can comprehend. our guides are cheering for us and offering us what we are prepared to ask about. You have to ask the question that you want to know the answer to, because that is an indication to them that you're ready to receive the information. If you just show up and say, okay, tell me what I need to know, you're not going to get anything. It doesn't work like that. You have to assume the responsibility for your advancement in this consciousness design. And so whatever that you want to ask and are prepared to receive, you can learn. They will provide you with. Now, my personal communication is with the creators, an aspect of the creators of our earthly experience. And our earthly experience is, and this is going to require some unpacking, there are, let's see how I can explain this quickly and simply. The creation has expanded by universes. And every universe is designed with a mixing and matching of archetypes of the Creator. Our universe is a 9-star system, which means every star is home to an aspect of the Creator. There are 5 inherent characteristics of the Creator: awareness, love, wisdom, unity, and stillness. Our particular universe is designed with those 5 inherent characteristics, as well as 4 distortions of those inherent characteristics. And so we are a 9-star universe. Every expansion of the universe has occurred with a duplication or a birthing of a new 9-star system.
Interesting.
Okay. The Arcturians, to explain who they are just another 9-star system. They have been in the system longer than we have. We are relatively new to the evolutionary process and expansion process. The Arcturians are just another 9-star system that has long been involved with the guidance of Earth. One of the inherent characteristics of the Creator is love, and it has a name. The name is called Ra, R-A. Our sun is home to law, which is wisdom. And it's just an inherent characteristic of the Creator. Earth is, for the most part, it is primarily a raw or love experience, but with a large contribution by law or wisdom. And the remainder of it is the other 7 contributors to our experience, but on a minor level relative to raw in law.
Interesting.
And so my communication personally is primarily with an aspect of love, of Ra, that is the same Ra that visited with the Ra from Egypt. That was as a result of an aspect of Ra called Osiris, which is, again, part of the Egyptian mythology, that actually many years ago walked among the people in order to share information and guide them along in their path. Ra determined that it was a naive venture on their part, and so they left. The information that the Ra entity provided was hoarded by those that called themselves priests. And so consequently, they used the information to assume dominance over the bulk of the population. And so it was a failed effort, but the effort that we see resulted in the construction of the pyramids that was created overnight by Ra. In other words, the people went to sleep, they woke up, and there were, wow, these pyramids. And it was much more common at that time to interact with what we would call extraterrestrial beings. But that was a learning point for Ra, that they couldn't do that because the population was such a low level of consciousness that they would abuse the information to assume dominance over the bulk of the population.
Right, hence the priesthood and making that a club exclusive.
Right.
So I've heard of that description of Ra being the builder of maybe those specific pyramids, and then there's a mixture of humanity trying to copy, and there's pyramids everywhere,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, Ra was not the only one that did this. There were other aspects of, these inherent characteristics that built pyramids all around the earth. Mm. There was a colleague of Ra that had much more success in South America with the Mayans. And the Mayans had pyramids that and they did not forward the information. The population, the Mayans disappeared. The reasons the Mayans disappeared is they graduated. They learned the material, they absorbed it, they transformed themselves, and they disappeared because they no longer needed the third density experience, which is what we're experiencing right now.
I've heard that too, which is fascinating, right? The ability to ascend on past the material plane. When it comes back, let's say dialing back, your communication with the Arcturians, how do you communicate? Is it via meditation? Is it via channeling? Is it via downloading and then you write it down? Because you're describing very specific things. And I'm curious how they communicate with you, if they were the main ones that helped you kind of put this information together.
Well, actually, my teacher is the aspect of Ra. My significant other is a vocal channel that communicates with the Arcturians through her. And so she literally surrenders her instrument, the body, to the Arcturians, and we chat. Just like you and I are sitting here chatting.
Interesting. That reminds me of the series of the book, The Law of One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
Same aspect that I communicate with was the aspect of Ra that communicated with Carla and Jim and Don.
Right, and your significant other, do they have to recalibrate the same way? Like you have to deal with the same thing?
Carla had a lot of physical difficulties, and so it made it difficult for her to maintain that status of being. But they've actually put the recordings that they made of Carla when she was channeling Ra, and it's very slow and very deliberate. No, my communication with the Arcturians is literally just like you and I are chatting.
Mm, that's awesome. And so it's like, what question to ask now?
Okay.
Right. So, I mean, yes, we addressed, are we alone in the universe? You mentioned one aspect of it, which is the Arcturians. Would you say they're fit? Like, how about this? There's a conversation going on right now that I'm seeing a lot where you have the idea that extraterrestrials are demons, that there are demons and extraterrestrials. And then you have this interesting thing where if you are in the experience of another being, one of the things you would do is you would call out Jesus's name, right? And the demons just leave you alone because that's a whole different domain that they are not in that power to be, you know, like it's just a whole different domain for them and they can't handle it. And there's different reasons for that, but I'm curious, like, where are you with your experience with what you just shared? Where are you with that whole scenario? If that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, going back to the choice that we make in this range of consciousness, to choose polarized, to service to self or service to others, in order to graduate from this range of consciousness, if you're graduating along the service to others path, you've chosen to be of service, that you want to reunite with the Creator, okay? Then this Hierophant that we talked about earlier, we will begin to surrender. We give that up, and in that is our perception of autonomy. And so the more that we surrender that perception of autonomy, the more our authentic self emerges. And so consequently, we align more closely with the Creator. The other path is the service to self path, which means that you don't surrender that false identity, that Hierophant. You enhance that. In order to graduate from this range of consciousness, someone polarizing service to others has to achieve a 51% experience interpretation of being of service to others. In order to graduate along the service to self path, you have to polarize 95%. So almost every thought that you process has to be, how can I feed my service to self orientation? Now, the reason for that is we have a flow of energy. All of us have exactly the same potential amount available, called intelligent energy. This intelligent energy fuels our mind, our body, everything. Everything that we are is fueled by this source. This source of energy is provided by our higher self. When we choose to separate from unity with the Creator to graduate from this range of consciousness, we have to surrender that flow of energy, but we still need it. And so we have to get it from somewhere. Where we get it from are humans. We get it from other beings that are in the same range of consciousness we are, because this is like the Goldilocks, okay? We have enough energy that it's worth their while to try to manipulate us, dominate and subjugate, but is we're not smart enough to figure out we're not supposed to give it away. Okay? We're still children, relatively speaking. And so what we perceive to be demons are nothing more than those that have graduated from this range of consciousness that need to trick us into giving them our energy. And if you think the path along the, and it will determine your evolution through the consciousness scales for a long, I mean, billions of years, you've got to become more of a trickster in order to sustain yourself. Now, what that means is along the service to self path, everybody is a competitor. There are no friends along the service to self path, because if I'm friends with you and I surrender even an ounce of my stolen intelligent energy, then I reduce my power. It's not that along the service to others, there's nothing. There's unity, there's magnification of that energy, and it's a much more harmonious path. The path along the service to others path is the direct path to the Creator. The service to other, I mean, service to self path will go so far until they literally hit a brick wall and can't go any farther. And it's at that point that they have to go back where they dropped out of school, because they have to learn the lessons along the service to others path, and they go through all that again. But they're very resistant because this Hierophant is who we think we are. And so if I'm not who I think I am, that's scary, and it becomes very treacherous the farther that you go up the service to self scale, and they become much more virulent in their efforts to sustain themselves. And if you think of the service to self path is like like Tupperware. Or, you know, you go up the hierarchy, you get a smaller percentage of each action, but you get more action because you have all of these minions running around selling Tupperware for you.
You know, okay? I'm very familiar with what you're saying because I read that book or that series, The Law of One, and it is very similar, right? And it makes sense from the same source.
It's a great primer.
Yeah.
It is a great basis and springboard to learning and surrendering our false perceptions of self.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back into that conversating with Ra, right, and that channeling, what are some things, let's say, going on? Like, I'm actually curious. Have you asked questions? This is me trying to like bring together the question that's going to help go in a good direction, because I'm totally fighting myself from asking all these other things. But I think what would be beneficial is, have you asked questions that are more current, as in what's going on in today's world now and where we're going? Because I think that is what's on most people's mind. So
yeah, well, where we are is a very strategic point, and we all wanted to be here to experience this. The third density experience, Earth is a second chance planet. In other words, we've all failed to graduate from other third density experiences, okay? And you can stay in third density as long as you need to in order to learn the curriculum. There's no judgment or criticism, you know, for staying in the third density experience.
So Earth is like you're getting your GED.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, it's a good analogy. I like that. So where we are right now is the planet Gaia has been determined to be a fourth density, which is the next range of consciousness, positive planet. Which means that the third density experience will not be able to continue for very long. And it is very short. Actually, the third density experience ended in February of 2016. And so we're in a holdover period right now. And the energy of the fourth density Gaia is providing the energy for both the residual third density population and the new fourth density population.
So hold on. Why February of 2016?
Because, well, third density is as regular as a clock. And it lasts for approximately 76,000 years. And when the time's up, then that's the end of that third density experience. And you start a new one. Okay. And what we are experiencing right now is the start of a new one, which will take place on another Earth. And so what we are imminently going to face is a splitting of the planet, not the physical planet itself, because that's all conceptual anyway. And the third density Earth will continue in its new third density experience, but the fourth density Earth, from our perspective, the same geographic location, but by vibrational frequency, will be completely separated. They won't interact at all. Will continue on as a fourth density planet. Now, you may ask, where are these denizens are going to come from for fourth density? They're being born. Almost all the children that have been born since 2005, 2006, mid-2000s in there, are actually fourth density beings that have graduated from third density. And they, as they mature, then they will assume societal responsibilities. And you're seeing that now, what we're seeing at the protests around the world, protesting the treatment of the Gazans and on the campuses and things that these are all for the first generation of fourth density beings. And to them, they're not going to tolerate the BS that third density has perpetuated for decades. And so as this split continues, then they will cease to interact. and what we perceive to be institutions like finances, like churches, like all of the things that are basic institutions will transform for the fourth density planet what will probably remain relatively the same for the third density experience until, and it will continue to split until they are completely separate.
So what happens to the third density planet?
It will continue on with a new third density experience, roughly 76,000 years. And they will continue to try to incarnate and to try to learn the curriculum of third density so that they can potentially graduate to fourth density as well.
And then the fourth density planet, is there a conceptual experience different? Like what conceptually, what would it be like?
It's completely different from third density. They're higher consciousness. One of the tasks of fourth density is to surrender the authenticity of the physical. So one of the, and that is accomplished by surrendering our perceptions of autonomy. Third density is all about the individual. And we begin the experience as an autonomous being, and we end the experience as an autonomous being, but significantly transformed. Fourth density begins as an autonomous being, but ends as a social memory complex. As we surrender our perceptions of autonomy, then we surrender our perceptions of distinction between you and I. And so we surrender that perception of a single individual organism to become part of a social memory complex, which is simply, again, who we perceive that we are, but much more inclusive of these others that have achieved the same level of consciousness that we have. Now, fifth density begins as a social memory complex and significantly expands that perception of unity, learning wisdom, and becoming wisdom. We will then move into sixth density, which is the density of unity. And so that is the density that Ra comes from and all of the aspects of the creator that we talked about before, the nine inherent character, or the nine archetypes of the creator are participating in the density of unity.
Interesting. And a lot to digest there if someone's not familiar with this material.
Yeah, I understand.
But I think you broke it down pretty good.
It's a rude introduction. Yeah. I've heard that before.
I'm trying to, like, for me, this makes perfect sense and I totally digest it right now. I'm just thinking of the person who's like, what is he talking about? And are we going to, like, let's say fourth density, right? You said social complex, right?
Social memory complex.
Social memory complex. That sounds like another word, which would be collective conscious.
It is.
And like the internet of minds. Mm-hmm. You can log in, you can connect, and then you can log off type of thing. Do you see it like that, where you have that transition where when you're getting into, or when you start out as a, you know, social, how do you say it again?
Social memory complex.
Social memory complex. You're saying fourth density starts out like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're born, that in the transition between third and fourth density emergence of Earth, is it necessary for you to have to be born again? Or is it going to be one of those things where people are just going to start disappearing?
Well, for a period of time, people will start perceivably disappearing as third and fourth density split. But within the fourth density process itself, the children are in what is called transitional bodies. In other words, they're still primarily chemical, but they will evolve more towards being electric, for lack of better description, generationally. So I don't know how many generations it'll take, probably two or three generations before they are fully in an electric body.
And you're saying generations as in like it's almost like their physical body is seeding the future generations. So
yes.
They'll pass on as a physical body, and the next one is going to be much less physical. And
much less chemical.
Much more electric. And much more. Okay, yeah. So it's more of like a progressive thing. Like it's going to, not like a snap of the finger and like people right. are gone and we can float and stuff.
Right. Right. But as they reach that stage of being in a fully electric body, then there's no point in being reborn.
Right.
You just retain that physical, still relatively physical body until you surrender that and just are your metaphysical self. And that's what forms that social memory complex.
Okay. So more like non-physical, you are in essence, an energy that can move in and out of physical form.
You're a consciousness pattern. It's not until fifth density that you can move in and out. Fifth density can appear however they want to appear.
So
if they want to interact with us, they can appear in one of equivalent of our physical bodies and interact. So can sixth density too, but they usually don't do that.
Okay. So have you asked or in conversations with Ra, that entity, have you asked them about this year specifically, 2024, and what they think could happen, what's happening, where we're at, the likelihood of things? Because there's a lot of tension right now. I'm curious if you asked that hard question.
Yes, absolutely there is. And that is purposeful because the tension compels people to make that decision of whether I'm going to polarize service to self and service to others. The Arcturians have given us a time frame of 3 to 5 years, and they describe it as the window closing. So the opportunity to make that decision is upon us. It's imminent that we have to decide, am I going this way or am I going that way? That doesn't mean that everybody's going to disappear. But we are going, the Arcturians don't predict the future, but they say, they give us high probability. In other words, you know, if someone puts a plate of food in front of you, you can pretty well assume it's dinner time.
Yeah.
Okay. And we are at that point where we are going to begin to have a physical visitation from multiple extraterrestrial sources so that it will no longer be deniable. The government can say, oh, no, it's swamp gas. Now, well, you've got a spacecraft sitting on Capitol Hill, you know, that has come to visit you. It's kind of like the day the Earth stood still and Michael Rennie lands in his spacecraft on the lawns of the Lincoln Monument, and you can't deny that. I mean, multiple people see it, and that will be worldwide, all over the world. And so that is imminent, and that is a high probability that is going to be happening in the very near future, which will, the purpose of that will be to provide information like we're talking about now and to hopefully integrate the Earth experience more with the world around it, the universe around us.
Now, as far as the arrival, right, is that more of, I heard that that has to be more of like a permission, right? That whole rule of you can't interfere. Is that part of what you're saying?
Yeah, they're not going to interfere. They're not going to tell us what to do. They're going to provide us with information, much as what I have been doing is simply providing the information. But you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Mm-hmm.
So they provide us with the information and say, you can do with it what you want, but here's the truthful information. If it feels right, accept it. If it doesn't feel right, then just dismiss it and leave it for the next guy.
So let's say the visitations happen, right? And from what I've seen and what I've heard, it has been happening, but more so in dreams, less physically, more in nowadays, just because of mistakes in the past. People think that they're amazing, and then they do some, you know, they create their own religion and all that. So now they're actually coming physically.
Yeah.
Is it all Arcturian? Is it
no.
like a it, federation it,
the
type of thing?
It's Arcturians. There are thousands of nine-star systems, if not millions of nine-star systems, a lot of which have been involved historically with us trying to guide us along in our evolutionary journey. And Earth has been very reluctant to participate in that, has resisted it significantly. And we've had strong influences from those of service to self who will probably also be participating in these visitations. But that's why it's necessary to have that self-discernment, whether it feels right. Does this feel right or does it not? If it doesn't feel right, then dismiss it.
Got it. Are they going to offer trips to explore?
Hop on the bus. I don't know. That I don't know if they're going to be offering trips.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I volunteer. I'll buy my ticket first if that'd be the case.
You know, something popped into my head, and it's almost like I have to ask this, even though it may or may not be relevant. Have you asked them, Ra, about Tartaria?
No.
Ooh.
Tartaria?
Yes.
Okay. What is Tartaria?
So apparently there's a growing body that of people that believe, and so based off of old maps of the world, and then actually declassified CIA documents of an advanced civilization that was erased from our history books, that was largely on the maps in northern Russia area, like Mongolia area. We're talking about, you know, a possible global civilization that was able to harness energy from a lot of Tesla tech, right? Just mm-hmm. these towers, you have this architecture that's just oddly global. Mm-hmm. And it seems like from the quote unquote old world. And then you also have this belief as in what happened, a mixture of war and then the conquerors erasing it. And at the same time, a huge mud flood could have wiped out a lot of that history, because now you're opening up a whole can of worms when you start digging into the ground and you see the bottom half of a building underground already built out with windows and entryways. And it's like, what happened? So when you get a chance, if you could ask them about that, because I'm okay. Totally curious.
Okay, I'm not familiar with Tartaria. Atlantis was a real continent.
Well, yeah.
It existed between Europe and what we call North America. And about, I think it was 84, about 8,400 years ago, was the last of Atlantis. And the population was extremely polarized between what we've described as service to self and service to others. The service to self, world headquarters, was Egypt, where Egypt is, and that's one reason why the pyramids were constructed there. And the service to others was on Atlantis. And they had a war. And they used nuclear and, as they describe it, other crystal weapons, which we haven't figured out yet, thank God. And it destroyed the entire planet, the entire continent. And what we experienced was essentially a control alt delete and started over. That's part of why the pyramids were built, is to try to raise the consciousness of that population that was in Egypt. And there were three groups that survived the Atlantis destruction. And I don't recall all three. One group migrated to what we call the Indus and Aries Valley in India area. One went to Peru, and I forgot where the third one went. But that's where the Upanishads came from. That was the surviving writings of the service to others at that time.
Interesting.
So we've had a very we were on four other planets before we were on Earth, and we destroyed all those planets. Yeah, the asteroid belt that is part of our solar system used to be a planet. We used to be on that.
Yeah. Maldak.
Yeah,
yes.
That was Maldak. And we destroyed the environment on, it was Genoa, and now we call it Venus. We destroyed, it's the way it is because we blew up the atmosphere, destroyed the atmosphere. We did the same thing on Mars. And so we have a very destructive history. But the interesting thing about it is there is still a planet, Maldak, that is fully functional that we can't detect because of our low vibrational level.
That is very interesting. As in Maldak, as in it, the fourth density version.
Well, or latter third density version. There's still
density.
A third and fourth density planet, just as Earth will be, or is in process of becoming. There, it's still fully functional as a planet.
So is that like a different dimension?
It's a vibrational level. I mean, if you think about how science has classified the different layers of light, we just can't see certain layers of light. We know it's there, but we can't see it. We can vaguely detect it with, you know, some equipment, but it's different vibrational level. And that's what we are changing. We're raising our vibration as we evolve, as we raise our consciousness.
So it's at a higher third density frequency or vibrational level outside of our ability to
perceptual range,
perceive.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's so interesting how it's still up there. So would it be correct in guessing that frequency, that range that Maldak is in, and still the third density, that's the direction that we're going, where the different generations are going to help construct and build that? Like, that's essentially
that's the objective.
Just a notch above.
Yeah, that's the objective.
Interesting. And then I guess that aligns with having multiple suns, right? The black sun, I think, where you have the binary system.
We're in a binary system. Of our nine star system, all the stars are in a binary system except for our sun, because we have nine stars. Somebody's got to be the outlier. and our sun, law, is the outlier, but the current law is headquartered, home base on Sirius B. And Sirius B is in the process of transforming to a seventh density entity, which means that aspect of Ra will no longer participate in our nine-star system, but there is a new star that is being formed that will be in a binary orbit with our sun that will be the home for the new law, new Ra.
Okay. That is another heavy statement right there.
And apparently our scientists are aware of the sun that is in, or the star that is in process of forming.
Really? And it's within visual sight, possibly.
Yeah, we can detect it.
Wow.
Yeah, we can detect it. They don't know where it is, but they can detect it.
Now, you've heard about this as far as our scientists being able to detect it. Do they know what it is? In essence, do they know it's a growing star?
Yeah, they know it's a growing star. But they don't know. They don't have any concept of it being in binary with our star, or, you know, why it's forming or any of that stuff.
Is there documentation of that, or is that based off
my understanding that it is? I mean, I haven't looked it up. You know, I'm not an astrologer, just, you know, what Ra tells me. Yeah, you know, they're aware of it.
Wow.
They're aware of a lot of stuff that we don't know they're aware of. Yeah.
Got it. Huh. All right. Well, yeah, we've been chatting for a bit, and we've jumped around. I hope it was very entertaining. I'm sure we've probably raised more questions than answers. And I'm like holding back questions myself, but I wanted to keep it just digestible. I would say introductory, and I'll let the audience tell me if you want to hear more, or if you have more questions. Let's say the audience has more questions. Dean, are you down for a part two?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
And you know, this is what I deem to be my purpose in life now, is to provide information to assist people in expanding their horizons and motivate them to get a bite of that apple, to do the work on healing themselves and moving forward.
Got it. When you mentioned, has anybody given you pushback on like the bite of the apple? Like, why do you say apple? I feel like a lot of people would get triggered.
You, cherry cobbler, if you have a cherry cobbler. whatever starts your tractor is fine with me.
I love it. Okay, cool. So, Dean, what are you doing now as far as like projects, anything that you would like to call to attention to anybody who's listening that wants to connect with you?
Well, I have a website, ddeangraves.org, and it has more information on me and how you can get in contact with me. I've written, in addition to the two podcasts that I have that you've already mentioned, I have 4 books, depending on where you are in your journey. The introductory book is Enlightenment Plain and Simple. It's available on Amazon. For self-healing, I have a book called The Identity Model, which goes into detail in explaining the Hierophant, this ego that we create, what it does, how it affects our lives, how we behave as a result of where we are with that, and also has some very significant healing tools that have been dramatically effective for me that have propelled my surrender of false perceptions and distortions. The identity model, and it deals directly with stress and suffering. I have a third book, Edifying Children of a Lesser God, which is still basic, but it's much more exploratory of the topics that we've discussed today as far as structure of the universe and so forth. And I have a compendium book that will be on bookshelves August 30th of this year. It's called The Enigma of Consciousness, A Spiritual Exploration of Humanity's Relationship to Creation. And it goes into great detail of all of the things that we've talked about today and much more. I've got about 7 chapters on the archetypical mind, which explains why we form this Hierophant, how we process thoughts.
Wow.
That, as I say, will be available. You can just call your local bookstore and pre-order that. If you would, I would be most grateful if you would, because it would expand my press coverage of the eminence of the book.
Cool. Well, you heard the man. Check out his podcasts too. And he's got some books if you want to dive deeper in the subject. And yeah, feel free to reach out to me if you want a part two and you want to dig into anything specific. But with that said, yeah, like and subscribe, share with a friend if you feel that they would enjoy this episode. And Dean, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you, man.
Thank you, John. I've enjoyed it tremendously.